Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast and Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thank you very much for doing so. This is 1240 B. The Bees are always the latest in medical information presented by a great guest. Today we have one, and she's going to talk about one of the new tests, that is the quick swallowing test, and what it indicates and why it's so important. Her name is Angela Morrell. She is a speech language pathologist, as well as works for the American Speech Language Hearing Association. You can go to their website to find out more. It's asha.org. This is your host, Dr. Mike Roizen, and as usual, we're sponsored by LifesFirstNaturals.com, Naturals with an S. They're the makers of Truebiotics, Bovine Colostrum, and Dye Rescue. You can go to their website, LifesFirstNaturals.com, and see the randomized double-blind controlled trial, why probably everyone over the age of 50 should at least consider taking both a Truebiotic and 4,000 milligrams of Bovine Colostrum daily. And the other sponsor, our own LongevityPlaybook.com. Go to their website, sign up for the free newsletter, or take the actual age test. Angela, how did you happen to decide to go into speech language pathology?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually had some personal connections through my family, a couple of people who were impacted by neurological diseases, including dementia and ALS. I saw how they worked with speech-language pathologists, and I was also studying linguistics at the time. So having the personal experience of seeing my relatives being helped by speech-language pathologists, and also having a background and an interest in how people learn and acquire language, and how that language can be impacted by conditions like stroke or like other neurological conditions. And so that's how I got into it, and I haven't looked back since. I have worked in the medical environment, in hospital settings, and in skilled nursing for my entire speech pathology career, and I love it.
Tell us, what is the quick swallow test? Is that the proper name for it? Is it called the quick or the short swallow test?
It's a little bit lengthy. It's the repetitive saliva swallowing test, or RSST, and it counts how many times a person can swallow their saliva in 30 seconds. And it aims to detect for swallowing difficulty, which is known as dysphagia.
Well, I've just done it, and I can get about 10 in. Where does that place me on the scale?
That places you within the average. So interestingly, this article that was published last year in the journal Dysphagia looked at the age ranges and looked at what is considered normal for anyone between their 20s all the way up to their 80s. So there's different normal ranges for each decade. But if you're at 10, then you're above average for folks in their 20s and 30s. So that's pretty good.
And since I'm in my 70 to 80 age range, it's even better.
Exactly.
So tell me about, why is this important and what controls it? Is there something in our neuromuscular system or our brain system that is measured by this, and why do we care about this?
So this is important because it's a quick screening tool. So it tells us if we may have a swallowing problem known as dysphagia. And swallowing is controlled by our neuromuscular systems. A lot of it happens automatically. Some of it is something that we can control. For example, chewing, moving food from the food from the front to the back of our mouth is something that we can control voluntarily. Whereas when food or liquid or even saliva goes to our throat, it automatically passes down towards our food pipe in a very automatic way. Now, where people can sometimes run into issues is if they have conditions like neurological disorders, such as stroke or brain injury, or things like head and neck cancer, where medical treatments like surgeries or radiation or chemo can impact their ability to swallow. And swallowing is important for our nourishment, but it's also important for our social engagement. And we've seen that folks with swallowing difficulties can retreat from their normal social environments. Food and drink is something that a lot of our social atmosphere kind of revolves around. So this quick test can help to determine if somebody might have a swallowing problem, but I don't think people should fret if they score below the normal range. It's just, it might be good to talk to your doctor or your speech language pathologist because there is help for swallowing issues.
So what kind of help is there? In other words, I've learned some things we do, exercises we do with our mouth to strengthen our vocal cords. Is that part of it, or are there other things relating to this?
Yeah, that can be part of it. And it often depends on what is causing the issue. So if the issue is with strength of the muscles, then exercises can help. In other instances, exercises might not be appropriate. For example, people who might have certain neurological conditions where it's very important for them to preserve their energy. So other types of help would include different strategies or techniques that are recommended on an individualized basis. And so there's also education that speech language pathologists can do that can help reduce the risk for complications related to swallowing issues. For example, things like weight loss or infection like pneumonia.
You mentioned neurologic disease, and a lot of people with Parkinson's disease have problems with this. What do we do for them?
Yes, so there are certain conditions like Parkinson's, like multiple sclerosis, where it's more common to have swallowing issues. So for people with Parkinson's, sometimes exercises can help, again, depending on the patient or client's specific needs. There's other types of structured therapies that can work on vocal strengthening or voice strengthening and can help strengthen the cough, which can help to also improve swallowing. So it can be exercise-based, and then it can also be changing behaviors related to eating and drinking. So sometimes having smaller bites or sometimes adding moisture to foods or taking smaller sips can be helpful tools to ensure that food and liquid is passing towards the food pipe and not going down towards the windpipe.
When should one be doing this test? I mean, it sounds like one can do this almost on your own. All you need is a stopwatch and count the number of times you can swallow in 30 seconds. I could do this on my own, but I'm saying, is that a common for people to do it on their own? And when should one, every 50-year-old do it, every 60-year-old do it? Who should do this?
Anyone can do it. I think one important distinction is that this is a screening tool. It's not a full evaluation. So you can think of it like a quick blood pressure check. It's not going to give you a diagnosis, but it can tell you if something's off and if you should follow up. So if you are doing this quick test, this repetitive saliva swallowing test, and if you fall below the average for your age, then it would be helpful to reach out to a speech language pathologist. You can go to our website at asha.org to find speech language pathologists near you.
Let me repeat that, if you will. So that's asha.org. It's an organization, not a .com. So asha.org. And you could find a speech pathologist in your area or get a referral from your physician for speech pathologists. What do you do when you see someone who, for example, let's just say someone in their 60s can only do it four times a minute? What do you do then? What's your next step?
So next step, once you see a speech language pathologist, we will do a full assessment. And what this might look like is the person might come into a clinic, get a full assessment of their medical history, what types of medications they're on, what they're having difficulty with. So is it liquids that they're having trouble swallowing? Is it just that they below average for the repetitive saliva swallowing test? Are they having things like weight loss or other complications? Are meals taking longer to eat? We'll go through an entire inventory of questions for them to see exactly what's going on and what their history might be that could be associated with this swallowing issue. We might give the person different foods or liquids to assess how they're tolerating different textures and if other factors like fatigue or breathing issues might be impacting that. And then in some cases, we'll do different imaging tests. So we'll either do a video x-ray to look at how foods and liquids are moving through the mouth, throat, into the upper part of the food pipe or esophagus. So that's called a video fluoroscopic swallow study or modified barium swallow study. And another type of imaging test that we might do involves a small camera, which is called a flexible endoscopic evaluation of swallowing, or FEES, where we would take a look with a camera to see how foods and liquids are moving through the throat. We do that full comprehensive assessment, and from there we can determine if the person actually has a swallowing issue. We will work with doctors, we'll work with different specialists to help to determine what's causing that swallowing issue. Swallowing difficulty or dysphagia doesn't just happen on its own, although there can be some age-related slowing of the swallowing as we age, but typically it's caused by another condition. So we can provide the results of our assessment to doctors, to other specialists, to help determine if another medical issue is happening and what we can do to then treat that swallowing problem.
So basically, once you find this, you should get yourself to both a physician, maybe a neurologist who is an expert in this, as well as someone in the speech pathology area. Again, it's ASHA, ASHA.org, to find out more about the repetitive saliva swallowing test and to then get care from a speech pathologist to help you. Now, if you have a speech problem, would you associate that with a swallowing disorder, or are they totally different?
That's a great question. Sometimes they can be associated with a swallowing issue. So if people have, especially if a voice, if someone's voice is very hoarse or if it's breathy, so if there's a lot of air coming out when they speak, that could be an indication of weakness or an issue with their voice box. And our voice box actually helps us with swallowing. So in some cases, that could be a potential sign of something else going on. Now, speech language pathologists also can help with voice disorders, and we work in conjunction with ear, nose, and throat doctors to help treat voice and speech issues also. That's a great point. If somebody has slurred speech or if they have a hoarse or breathy voice, we might want to take a further look at how they're swallowing it and at least just ask, hey, are you coughing when you eat or drink? Are you choking when you eat or drink? Are things going down the wrong pipe? So that we can also address that in our therapy.
Again, it's ASHA.org. I want to thank you very much, Angela Morrell. And where are you? Where are you specifically located if people want to see you specifically?
I'm based out of Rockville, Maryland, and I practice as a speech language pathologist in Washington, D.C. at a local hospital there. But any speech language pathologist that you can identify through ASHA.org, there's different ways to check out different specialties because we all have different areas where we might specialize. So oftentimes in local healthcare settings like hospitals or outpatient clinics is a great place where you can find a speech language pathologist.
Thanks very much. We'll be back next week. This has been 1240B. Remember the rapid, and I'm going to try and get it right, repetitive saliva swallowing test, RSST, repetitive saliva swallowing test. The average number of times you can swallow. And you can find this on the ASHA, ASHA.org website. 20 and 30s is 8.4, 40s is 8, 50s is 7.25, 60s, 6.7, 70s, 6, and in the 80s, 4.3. So your repetitive swallowing, repetitive saliva swallowing test seems to decrease in frequency as you get older, like many things, but you probably can keep it younger, and ASHA, ASHA.org, is one place to turn if yours is at average or below. Thanks very much. We'll be back next week with another guest. So this has been 1240B. The Bs are always wonderful guests, like Angela Morrell has been. We again are brought to you by LifesFirstNaturals.com. Lifes, L-A-F-E-S, First Naturals with an S.com, where you can find more about bovine colostrum, dye rescue, and true biotics, and see their randomized double-blind controlled studies on why we think most people over 50 should at least consider taking these daily. I do. As well as go to longevityplaybook.com. You can sign up for the free newsletter at longevityplaybook.com, as well as soon take and sign up for the longevity coaching program via the AI nurse known as Rachel. Thanks again very much. We'll be back next week. And especially thank you, our listeners. 50,000 a week of you, can't be wrong. Thanks again.